You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, I can't express to you how fucking done I am. Like, it is one of those weeks where at just Tuesday, but let me be honest with you, I was done at probably noon on Monday when Donald Trump once again skirts the law, gets a get out of jail free card with the lowering of the bond that he has to pay in the Tish James fraud case, fraud as it pertains to his real estate, from $454 million to $175 million. There is no one that skirts the law, that finds the loopholes, that is enabled than Donald Trump. And what I will say is what everyone has been saying on social media is that, like, I'm over it. I'm not following anymore. Do you know what I'm saying? Because these cases are never going to come to fruition. Donald Trump has been able to do this dirty dealing for the last, what, 40, 50 years of his life? No accountability. No nothing. He is rich. He is white. And he is powerful. And every single system bows to him. And, you know, for anyone who wants to say, well, oh, this is customary in these types of cases, do you know what's not customary? Donald Trump. Do you know what is not the norm? Having a fascist, misogynistic, racist, homophobic, xenophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, confirmed guilty of sexual assault person running for president of the United States. Having a 50-50 chance of becoming president. And at this point, there isn't a system that you, an agency that you can point to that is not working in lockstep with Donald Trump. So whether it is just recently Ronna McDaniel leaving the RNC as their head liar in chief and being able to be welcomed with open arms into mainstream media with a contract worth $300,000 with NBC. Like, it's just, I'm fucking over it. Because I sit around, I spit facts, I yell, I'm indignant, and nothing ever changes. And so at what point do we all just decide, you know what? Fuck it. You want to take this country back? Take it. You want to run it into the ground? Run it. You want to give tax breaks to billionaires and millionaires? Great. You want to get rid of social safety nets? Wonderful. You want to, you know, lock LGBTQ people up in an open air camp? Great. You want to kill all Black people? Okay. You know, at what point do we just say fuck it and move on and get out? Because the constant battle to win nothing on our side ever, I'm exhausted. And today is yet another one of those days where I'm just like, I'm exhausted. I'm over it. And you're not going to spin this into something being good or this is just normal, because you see, systems need to change in order to match the people that they are dealing with. I wish that Donald Trump was treated by the justice system the way that innocent Black people are treated. Like shit. Right? I wish that there was, you know, no time for appeal, no nothing. You can do that from jail, even if you are innocent. Everywhere, white supremacy and wealth reign supreme. And I just am over it. You know, which is why in today's show, I took a break from just straight politics and had a conversation with a friend of mine, Malia Lazoo, who has a new book out entitled From Intention to Impact, A Practical Guide to Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, that came out earlier this year. Malia is an award-winning tenured strategist in diversity and inclusion and a lecturer in technological innovation, entrepreneurship, and strategic management group at MIT Sloan School of Management. She is former EVP and regional president of Berkshire Bank and the creator of several accelerators designed to support minority-owned businesses in the Boston area. The conversation with Malia, we get into it about the attacks on DE&I, what it's like to do this work in this moment, and whether or not it will survive. Folks, I am very excited, super honored to, and I don't know if this is the first time or it's just been a very long time, but let's say to longtime friend Malia Lazoo, welcome to Woke AF Daily. Malia is an award-winning tenured strategist in diversity and inclusion and a lecturer in the Technological Innovation, Entrepreneurship, and Strategic Management Group at MIT Sloan School of Management. And she is, folks, the author of the new book, From Intention to Impact, A Practical Guide to Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. I could say that, wow, is this timely AF, this kind of book, Malia. Talk to us about the journey of the book, because I would argue that when you started, diversity, equity, and inclusion wasn't under attack. We were in a place of expansion. How can companies be better? How can schools be better? How can diversity, equity, and inclusion be better integrated into our learnings and our dealings in different industries and spaces? Fast forward, your book comes out, and every other headline is about DE&I, C-suite folks, leaders, teachers being fired, let go, investigated. Talk to us about this precarious moment and how your book fell in it.
Well, you know, you're so right. And Danielle, it's so great to be on and to see you. And hello, Woke AF folks. I'm a Woke AF folk, so it's fun to be on this side of the microphone. But, you know, when I first started writing this book, we had rights to our body that we don't have now, right? The attack wasn't as, it was coming. It was inevitable, right? But it wasn't as vicious and as whole as it is now. And so, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like my book came at the right time to talk about the importance of DE&I and how you get there. So even if you have to call it something else, you still have to deconstruct the white supremacy within your company. And that's really what my book aims to do. I was laughing with MIT Press and the publisher. I said, could we have like picked a better year, right? To have this conversation. And traveling around the country, it's been interesting. You know, the people in Florida wanted to talk politics, right? The people in San Francisco wanted to talk models, right? And we are in so many different places with this. But the one thing that has been steadfast is people are still really desperate to find ways to be interconnected with one another. You know, I think with the fascism and racism and sexism that's so overt, most people are actually saying, wait, no, that's not me, right? I might not want my daughter to marry one, right? But this is all too much. And so, you know, this book and these conversations have really given me a chance to intervene, right? With some people who think, oh, we may have to give it up. To be like, no, you just have to do this, right? You just have to get curious. You just have to get empathetic.
You know, and I think that's a really important thing to state and say. And I'm really grateful for the fact that you are the one who is offering up the ways that we need to maneuver and be nimble in this moment. Because I think that is what this political climate requires, is a level of nimbleness, imagination, and curiosity that is not linear, right? And so in your book, you outline what you refer to as 7 stages from intention to impact. Can you walk us through what those are and how you developed the 7 stages and why? Because I talk about, you know, we can both understand that people need steps and also understand that the work is not linear. So I want you to have an opportunity to speak to both of that.
Yes. And that's why I did these 7 stages, right? Because I didn't want them to be steps, right? I wanted them to be stages because at the end of the day, you can go from 1 to 7. You don't have to do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 if you just want to work on equity, right? And so, you know, these steps and stages were developed watching and working with companies and seeing what it actually took to go from an intention to an outcome, to an impact, to a hire, to a policy change, right? To a hiring, whatever that goal might be. And, you know, you see these themes and a lot of companies stay in the first 3, 4 stages, right? And the first 3 stages are the honeymoon phase, right? That's, you realize, you know, first stage, you can do something about the problem. Oh, we can sign a pledge, right? We can make a donation. Yay.
Right.
Look at us go. So we sign that pledge. Well, now we have to do trainings, right? Because we're going to make this work. We're excited. So now we start doing trainings, right? Then we decide we can take action on low hanging fruit. We're making a hire. We should make that person diverse, right? And then you start taking action on low-hanging fruit. And that's when you start seeing substantial pushback, right? And stage 4 is what I like to call devil's advocate, right? Like this idea that I'm pushing back, but it's for the good of the company. It's not, you know, it's not bad. It's not because I disagree with equity. I just don't know if we can get this through compliance, right? And stage 5 is, so you get it, you know, you answer compliance questions, but there's still pushback, right? Like, oh, well, you know, I'm not sure if this is a real cultural fit, right? I'm not sure if we have the time, right? And at that stage is when you have to start wondering, is this pushback legitimate, right? And you start seeing it might not be, right? This actually might be all deliberate speed, right? This actually might be slowing down of the process. And stage 6 is naming it and saying, I think that this pushback is actually racist, biased, sexist, whatever it might be. And I think there's no problem with hanging a sign on a bathroom that says everybody. I don't actually think we have to go through compliance. I think I just have to buy a sign and I think I just have to put it on the bathroom. And then everyone will know they're welcome in this bathroom, right? You have to actually name and then get to stage 7, which is you just buy the sign. Right. You just make the hire. You know, you just decide that you're going to act with integrity. And that's when you can actually have impact. But often most businesses do 1 through 4. They get the pushback. They don't want to go through the pushback. So they wait until 4 years later. There's another George Floyd. They make another commitment. There's another Pulse nightclub. They make another commitment, right? And that's how the cycle of equity for a lot of companies and corporations are. And so I wanted to be able to say these stages so that people could see what they were getting hung up on. And I also wanted to delegitimize the pushback, because what I have found with these companies is the pushback oftentimes is culture, not legal. We make it legal. Right. Because we don't actually want to push it back. Right. We don't actually want to maybe get an outside counsel to look at it. Right. We don't want to do those extra steps. So it's just easier to cover your ass and just, you know, wait till you have to go to stage one again and just let things die in stage four.
Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I think, too, where the struggle comes is honestly that nobody wants to struggle, right? Because what I realize about getting woke, about reaching a level of consciousness, is that that requires work, right? It is much easier to just hire within my network of people who look like me, pray like me, you know, love like me, and so on and so forth, right? And the easier that things can be made, that is always going to be the default that corporations, organizations revert to. So now, basically, where we are politically is that the Supreme Court has made it easier, once again, to discriminate, right? They have said, oh, you know all that work you've been doing over the last 40-some-odd years? Fuck it. You know, you don't really need to do it. So just, you know, wash your hands of the whole thing. And as a matter of fact, if you even have the word D-E-N-I together, right, we're coming after you. This is the plan of the right wing, right? So whether it's a Black woman's VC company, right, knowing that Black women get 0.001% of VC funding, so they come up with a fund that can fund black women entrepreneurs, and now they're being sued by white supremacists for being racist. The cat is out of the bag. So if now it's been, now legalized discrimination is back in vogue, how do you even begin to incentivize people who were already lazy to begin with in their work around consciousness?
That's exactly right, Danielle. And you know, the worst part about everything you said, besides it being true, is that the Supreme Court case was only about education.
Right.
And we were so, we meaning the U.S., not we as an individuals, but as a country, we were so ready to cast this into the garbage, right? That we didn't even need to work through the nuance because the right was ready. You know, the left, we're reeling off a book ban right off of the 50 ways they're doing this right now. And companies, as you said, a lot of them don't want this smoke, right? A lot of them feel, as straight white men, am I becoming irrelevant? But this is where, you know, I think it's important for us to sit in facts, science, and even their own data, right? Because at the end of the day, when we're talking about DEI, we're talking about, the way I like to call it is, it's civil rights for corporations, right? Like, that's basically what DEI is. And what people are understanding is that it's not about it's nice to do. It's about it's profitable, right? And in business, none of us show up to business to not get paid, right? So I don't need people in business to like me, to whatever, right? I need to bring in my value and I need to get a return on that value that I bring into a company. And what we know is that diverse teams are 34% more profitable, right? What we know is that women-led teams get 21% more patents in Silicon Valley. And what we also know, and smart CEOs know this, right? And I'm not just saying the ones who hire me, but there are other ones I talk about in this book. What they know is that right now, politics, employees, and consumers are very different groups of people. And if you're going to say that, well, our country is 50-50 because you're looking at voting, what you're not understanding, and you and I know this, and you know a lot of your listeners know this, right? We're talking about half of the half of a half of the American population.
Yep.
Right? If you're running a company, you care about who can buy and who can work.
Yep.
That's a very different demographic than who goes out and votes on the first Tuesday of November. And I think the smarter companies and what we're going to see, just like the smarter states, right? What we see is, you know, countries and states that are more progressive have higher GDPs, right? Like this is a UN study, right? What we're going to see is these companies aren't going to be able to keep up. And they're not going to be able to compete in a global economy where a majority of the country is brown and non-English speaking, unless they actually have people who don't only come to work black, but be at work black and bring that, you know, they don't only come to work brown, but they be brown when they're at work. That's how you're going to get the products, services, and top-notch talent to maintain, you know, a competitive edge. Technology, AI is not going to save you. The people who help you know how to use AI so that you can sell something, they're your cutting edge. They're your competitive advantage.
You know, I want to go down what I often do here, and forgive me, a dark path for a moment, which is that I'm not so sure that the right wing, I'm just staying on politics for a minute, actually give a damn about anyone being profitable outside of their donors. And I wonder if what is appealing to us as both consumers and workers, which is to be in a place of diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? Like, the, what do they say about Gen Z, right? And you know the numbers that, you know,
they'll take a pay cut.
They'll take a pay cut to work in a place that is mission aligned, right? That they'll make less because they already know they're not buying the house like their parents did because they can't afford it, right? So their values are very different than what Gen X, the boomers and up, you know, were. I wonder, however, with the policy decisions that we're seeing rolled out in these red right-wing states and the attacks that we're seeing, if they are still all about money, even though that they're white supremacists, like, it doesn't make sense. So help me make it make sense. Because what I have been talking about here on this show and others is America is about to experience a brain drain.
That's right.
And I want you to be able to talk about, hip us to why this doesn't seem to necessarily register with the people who are on the attack, who require workers in order to make the wealth that allows them to fly high.
Well, that's exactly right. Right. So I have a section in my book that asks the question, are we greedy or are we racist? Right. Because we're told as capitalists.
Isn't it both and?
Right. Because we're told, right. Well, the thing about capitalism is just about greed. It's about the almighty dollar. Right. Da, 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 da. Well, if that's the case, then you should want women-led teams, right? If that's the case. If it is just about your greed, because that's what you do, you don't worry about race, sex, or whatever, then you should start worrying about race or sex, because that actually helps your greed, right? Now, is greed good? We can have that conversation on another time, right? But what we're seeing, right, is this break with the right and business, right? Bob Iger never thought in a million years that he was going to have the governor of Florida come for him.
Right.
He bought that man probably, right? I'm sure we could go back and look at the checks and, right? These are politicians that had already been bought and sold. And now they're pushing back on things that are bad for business. Disney can't become homophobic. Bob Iger knows that, right? And what Bob Iger also knows is that Ron DeSantis can't afford to build a jail next to the most magical spot on earth. Right. Yep. And so folks, CEOs like Bob Iger, right, who are getting attacked, the ones who come out most successfully are the ones who are standing up to those right wing politicians. Right. You know, you look at Budweiser. Right. They decided to capitulate. And what happened? They got all of us mad. Right. At first, you just had the homophobes mad, but then you decided to capitulate. So then we all had to get mad at you and back up Dylan. Right. And again, this separation. You know, a lot of CEOs that I know, yeah, they like to say they're fiscally conservative, right? They're not fascist, right? And they don't want to be. They don't want their daughters or sons asking them why they're fascist. And those are the CEOs that are going to succeed, right? Those are the CEOs that are going to keep running their companies. And so, you know, your point is such an important one, because we remember in the civil rights movement, right? Rather than integrating, they burnt down the place.
Yep.
And that's what they're doing with the country now, right? Yes. Obama got elected and they're like, burn down the whole thing.
Yep.
But I don't know if everyone's going to let them do that, right? And I don't know if business has a lot invested in America as a country. And I don't know if they're going to allow our economy to become a pivotal economy, to become a regional economy like Russia, right? You know, they're already calling us a pivotal power, right? Businesses don't like that, right? And so now finding that journey is going to be hard because they're not well practiced, right? What do they know of liberation, right? They don't.
Right. Right. Right.
But what they know is that there's more Spanish and French speaking people in this world than there are straight white men. And that those people need to wear sneakers and are making choices about what dish soap to buy. Right. And so that struggle is real. You know, one of the examples that I talk about in my book, and actually, Danielle, you and I think we're working together at the time, was all these business folks started responding for George Floyd. Like, yep. We had never seen that, right? Oscar Grant, Michael Brown, like, it was a state civic people conversation, right? And businesses sort of just minded their business. But when George Floyd happened, we had no government support, right? There was, like, I mean, even Reagan came out during Rodney King, right? But instead, we had a president who came out and both-sided the issue. And business understood at that point that they had to be the adult in the room. Right, that they were the power. So now you have Jamie Dimon taking a knee, putting his fist up in the air, right? And then 3 weeks later, he's going to tell his shareholders to vote against a civil rights audit, right? But they knew at that moment that they had to stop the burning, And they would have preferred government to do it, but government wasn't doing it. But they couldn't have natives be restless. And I think that's what we have to, that's an opening for us. It's an opportunity, because whether they believe it or not, from the minute they decided we were chattel, we were inextricably linked to their economy.
Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Let me ask you this last question, because I think that we're in a quandary, right? We're in a moment, right? And you have worked shoulder to shoulder with civil rights leaders. You have built movements and social accelerators, and now you are, you know, looking at the present space that DE&I is in, but also looking to the future. So tell us, in your view, right, what does the future of DE&I look like? You know, can you paint a picture for us? And not only what does it look like, but what does it feel like? Because right now, it does not feel good or possible.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I think, so DEI for me is inevitable. Right. And the reason why I say that is because that's just how we're making babies right now. Right. It's how we're achieving as Black women right now. Right. If you want to only hire people with college degrees, well, guess what? The most educated demographic are Black women. So you're going to have to hire us. Right. And does that mean that America makes it through? Right. Those are our larger, you know, conversations. But as far as DEI, women aren't going anywhere in the workplace. Black people aren't going anywhere in the workplace. You know, we may call it something different, right? When I started this work, it was called affirmative action, right? And then it was called diversity, and then it was called diversity inclusion, and now it's DEIBA, blah, 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 right? The same journey as LGBTQ, right? We become more and more precise, right?
About
what we mean, and that's important. And, you know, we may have to call it wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right? But whatever we're going to call it, we're going to call it that. And we're going to continue to fight for our value to be seen in this country that we built, you know? I want to say, you know, to your point about the brain drain, I want us to lean into that, right? I want part of DE&I to be us being, you know, a privileged diaspora, how we go out and help other diasporas humbly, right? And with humility in finding our own liberation through leaving, right? But, you know, Marcus Garvey wasn't able to sell out, neither was Harriet Tubman. So I don't know if that's a realistic journey for us as a people. But I do think it's a realistic journey for us as individuals, and we should think about that. You know, I don't think we need to use our resiliency for Jim Crow fascism.
Come on.
Right. So, you know, I don't want us, you know, us to have to mammy this country to, back to health. But I do think that this country will inevitably be brown, will be more Spanish, right? Will be more Asian, and will be more progressive. And whether it does that with or without the government, you know, we have many examples, right? Whether that's Russia or, you know, South Africa, right? We have examples of countries deciding to change and not to change, right? And that really is going to be up to these young people, which is really what I'm happy for, because God knows they have a better grasp on liberation than anything we're putting forth right now.
Lord Jesus. Well, my friend, Malia Lazoo, let me tell you something. It has been far too long since we've been in conversation. I'm always grateful for you, but I'm very grateful for this book, this work, this conversation that you are having. Folks, it is From Intention to Impact, A Practical Guide to Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And if you are looking for a way, if you are in this field, if you are in any field, and you're looking for a way to navigate this moment, this is the book for you. Malia, thank you. And I hope that it will not be years until you join us again.
Thank you.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF. As always, power to the people and to all the people power. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.